Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
Bill, YouTube gives you inspirations in your YouTube studio now. And one of the things it suggested was unlocking hip mobility with rolling. I think getting into the whole concept of mobility, just a general term that means your ability to move something, the capacity to move. It's pretty buzzworthy. People use it as, you know, you need to be doing hip mobility drills. And then they just kind of blindly attack things from just a cardinal plane emphasis. Typical presentation of that is someone does a pigeon stretch to get transverse plane, and somebody does a hip flexor couch stretch to get the sagittal plane, and somebody does a adductor or frog stretch to get the frontal plane. These are concepts that people, and the backside, people do hamstring stretch or a straight leg raise in order to get the backside of the pelvis as well. So instead of just thinking about it from these sections and sides, and realizing that the ability or inability to move through my pelvis is predicated upon how the bones turn in relation to each other to move through space. That's what we're going to ask people to reconsider. It's not about blindly foam rolling all the muscles and then stretching them in all these cardinal planes, which is typically what the prior approach was. I guess we'll start there.
It's not appreciating the rotational element. It's always based on turn. It's like all you have to do is watch a tibia move on a femur.
So if we
use like a traditional vomitus representation of a straight knee, which is actually a screw home knee, which is actually an ER of the tibia relative to the femur. Okay, we know this, but yet it's still represented in this dead guy. I don't move, I don't breathe, straight plane kind of representation. We have to appreciate the fact that that's an ER representation relative to the proximal IR representation, to bend the knee by bending the knee, officially bending it. So again, to throw up in my mouth a little bit and use a sagittal plane reference of flexion, bending the knee. That requires, it's not bending the knee, it's requiring the tibia to rotate into internal rotation relative to its starting conditions and relative to a fixed femur position in space or a femur that's also moving into ER as you're moving the tibia into IR. That's how you bend a knee. If you don't respect that, then you're kind of lost, and then you're stuck in this sort of straight planish application, and then you wonder why that you might get some sort of short-term measurable result, but then you're always having to do the same things over and over and over and over again to try to get that result, and eventually it's just endless.
Yeah, it's so strange that it's almost like this sort of sunk cost thing. I don't understand, because they, orthopedic surgeons, anyone that's dealing with the knee, they understand the rotational component. They are looking for certain, like they screw, a screw is a helically oriented device.
Right.
The screw home mechanism is explaining to you that there is a turn associated through the knee.
Yes.
The anatomy of the knee shows you that there is a turn through the knee in order to move.
But it's like all of the anatomy points in this direction. So, you know, we wanted to talk about hips. It's like all you got to do, like all the way down to the bony level. If you look at the trabecular orientation, it is helical and spiral, and it matches. So like when the femur goes into the hip socket, right? The helical orientation actually matches going from femur into the pelvis. It's like there is supposed to be this rotational twisting representation, even if you constrain the system, right? So like traditional hip flexion measurement is a series of turns. It's a series of turns that takes place to move, like you're constraining it into what you perceive as a straight plane. The reality is that you got to turn away, you got to turn toward, and you got to turn away, and you got to turn toward as you're moving this hip through space, right? Like, and this always, and it always happens. So it's the constraint of the ability to turn that is the limitation in the ability to move.
Yeah. Also too, if you're looking at, even if you were to just only see things through straight plane movement, when And as someone's moving and someone's breathing, you're seeing sacral movement, you're seeing pelvic outlet change. It's like, what do you think is happening as those tissues are moving? The bones are going with them. Mm-hmm. And then that changes the shape of the pelvis to show you turns are happening. So right. Nothing is happening in these.
Right.
It's just the straight planes just helps you kind of pick out where something is in space.
But then you need a fixed point of reference.
Right. It's a fixed point of reference. It's like the map is not the territory.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. Yeah. Well, again, if you're using a dead guy representation and you're trying to describe movement, it's like you're kind of screwed because dead guys don't move.
Right.
They do have a fixed plane of reference because they're typically resting on the table.
Yeah.
Right. So we can actually say that there's a zero point that is fixed in space. And then we can make all these kind of references from there. But when we get up and start to move around, it's like, okay, all those fixed points are moving. And now you're playing pin the tail on the donkey with a moving donkey.
Yeah. So now that we've lost, so everyone that we grabbed with the clickbait for this episode, we've officially lost all of them. So now everyone that's left that's still on the network that wants to watch these things, maybe we'll boost our numbers just by getting those people for the first couple minutes until they get bored and leave. So hip mobility created what we can do if we're going to unlock the hips and use foam roller to help do that. There is a way. We're offering a perspective of there is a way to create the potential for movement and then honestly allow the movement to occur by just using a foam roller. Like you could just watch someone walk. You could have someone do a split squat like you and I had talked about a little bit earlier. And by just using foam rolling techniques, no couch stretch, no pigeon stretch, no hamstring stretch, I can completely change the sensations that someone is feeling in terms of stiffness or tightness. I'm making air quotes how they move through space just by using a foam roller.
Yes.
So I guess let's talk about an example of that.
Well,
so here's the problem.
So we have to establish. So what is full excursion? So full excursion would be the ability to move through. Like if we look at the shape of the pelvis, so we have an ER'd inhaled representation of the pelvis. We have an IR'd exhaled position of the pelvis. So that full excursion would represent full relative motions. Because if I can change the orientation of the bones, that means I have changes in muscle orientation. Okay. If I can't move those bones through the full excursion, then I also can't change the muscle orientation. And so the ability to change muscle orientation is typically associated with the ability to control the position of the center of gravity in space. We'll cast that aside for a second. Okay. And we'll just talk about muscle position and bony orientation. So right now, the representation I have is a limitation in hip mobility because I can't change the shape of the pelvis because I can no longer change the orientation of the muscles. So concentric orientation versus eccentric orientation. So if I have an ER'd pelvis, I have certain muscles that would be concentrically oriented. If I have an IR'd pelvis, I have certain muscles that would be concentrically oriented and vice versa, eccentrically oriented. Right. So my goal is to be able to identify the muscles that are limiting the ability to make those shape changes. The foam roller does a great job of actually reducing that concentric orientation to allow the bony shape changes to occur. Then I can start to move these bones through space. So my effect is superficially to deep would be change in muscle orientation, create spaces, a reduction in muscle activity creates a compression that does not allow you to move. So I'm trying to create a space to allow the muscles to actually change shape. That allows the bones to change shape. So case in point, concentrically oriented adductor magnus, concentrically oriented adductor magnus. The ischium and the femur are very close together. Okay. That means that the ischium and the distal femoral condyle also very close together. And so what I wouldn't be able to do if I was doing something dynamically, I would limit my ability to change direction by coming out of a cut in that circumstance. I would not be able to push the ground away. I would not be able to change direction because when I have a concentric oriented adductor magnus, I am standing directly over my foot. My pelvis is directly over. If I need the femur to move away from the pelvis, I need space at the hip. The foam roller pushes space in that direction. If I roll the adductor magnus from my knee towards my hip, I make a space. I can now move my leg away from the pelvis. I can now achieve the ability to come out of the cut. I have just increased my quote-unquote hip mobility by reducing the muscle activity that was limiting the hip mobility.
And just as a precursor to everything that we're talking about, if there's one, I think for anyone, so if you're watching this and you're just a general person that's just stumbled upon this, I can't imagine you understand anything that Bill just said, but that's okay. You're sticking with it. I'm proud of you. One big takeaway I hope that people would get from this, even though we haven't mentioned yet, but I'm about to, roll slower mm-hmm. if you're trying to make these effects that we're talking about and these changes yes. that we're talking about. I think one of the things that people tend to do is they try to like get on a PVC pipe and just fly around their muscles. Uh-huh. And they're using a very superficial, very fast yes. approach, yes. which might help ramp you up for activity and get things yes. firing and going. But when we're talking about getting rid of concentric orientation or a muscle that's gripping for dear life, we have yeah. to go slow and yeah. in order to allow for like a deep effect. And
do you want to make some rules?
Sure. Yeah. Maybe like starting rules or something.
Okay.
Like that.
So here's yeah. the rules. Here's the rules.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The broader the contact, the broader the contact. So let's compare a 1-inch diameter PVC pipe and a 6-inch foam roller. Okay. So the contact on the narrow PVC pipe is smaller and pokier, right? Mm-hmm. Greater potential for depth. So the smaller the contact of the implement, the deeper it can go. Okay. If you got like a older sister, would you like, if she's just kind of shoving you with her hand or if she's poking you with a finger, like which one's more annoying? Like they're both annoying, yeah. but the pokey finger worse because it goes deeper. It's a little bit more sensitive. So you think about like a lacrosse ball goes deeper than a foam roller would, right? The narrow PVC pipe goes deeper than the foam roller. So smaller contact, potential for going deeper, slower movement of contact, the deeper you can go. So depending on what structure that you're trying to use. So to gain depth, go slowly. If I'm trying to affect the shape of a bone versus the shape of a muscle, I have to go much slower than I would if I was doing something that would be more superficial like the muscle. Okay?
Right.
Right? Rate. The faster you go, the more superficial you stay. Right. So the people that are zipping back and forth on foam rollers and they go, yeah, foam rolling doesn't work. It's like, okay, well, what are you trying to affect? If I'm trying to stay very, very superficial, then by all means, go quickly, relatively speaking. But again, if we're going to go deep, got to go slow. So smaller implement, slower, deeper. Real simple. Right. Okay.
Okay. So for anyone that just heard that and is thinking, Bill told me to start with a PVC pipe and go really slow. Don't do that because it's probably going to hurt. And yeah. one thing that happens if
you have to get used to it.
If you're in pain as you're doing this, you could be doing the opposite of what you want to do. Because the body right. will, there is such a thing as like your body contracting muscles.
Or it'll protect.
Yeah, it's called guarding, right? That is a thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you don't want to necessarily do that. What yep. you would be a smart way to start would be to go slow mm-hmm. with a broader instrument
oh,
over
yeah.
time, working towards what yes. Bill is saying.
Okay. Well, and then the general rule is, and if you've ever been a patient in the purple room, you know this, it's like the general rule is I want best depth to affect the tissue that I'm targeting, best depth without the need to guard. It's like, so yes, it's going, it might be sensitive and it might be like, and I always refer to like a John Mellencamp, which yeah. is, and for those of you that don't know John Mellencamp, he had a song called Hurt So Good. It's like people like the Hurt So Good kind of a concept. They go, oh, that like, it's uncomfortable, but it's like the good kind. It's like when somebody comes up and they kind of rub that spot on top of your shoulder, like through your trapezius and your levator. Yeah. And there's like that one spot, you know, where you just go, oh,
right.
Just
keep, well, the noise is like, it's more like, oh, versus like the hurts so bad is like, there's always like,
yeah, exactly. It's like, so if you have to tense up against the resistance, then you're pushing too hard.
Yeah.
Real simple. Real
okay.
simple.
So I'm going to, based on the conversation that Bill and I just have, I'm going to try to do something that Bill doesn't want me to do. And I'm going to say, if we are going to start trying to affect the pelvic shape, and that's our top priority for hip mobility, making air quotes here for those not watching on YouTube. If I was to put you laterally on a foam roller and do a step over activity, which we may have to like put on YouTube at some point.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Just show a clip. That's fine.
that could be the thing that helps me get hip mobility back if I was to do one thing. But it will also be a diagnostic tool to lead me to what other things I might need to attack first. Because like Bill's saying, if all of this stuff that's close to the base of the pelvis is tight and it's not allowing me to move my leg into this space because it's restricted by these tight muscles, these concentrically oriented muscles, I won't be able to get into the position that we're describing because my knee will come off of the ground.
Yeah, because we have a marker.
Yeah, right? So that will be
a technical marker.
Right, and that would be a, or, you know, just like how uncomfortable or terrible the starting position might feel for somebody. If their hip is really, really oriented into ER and it's really sharp on the lateral edge and they can't even comfortably rest in that position, you might need to start somewhere else. Or what I'm also offering is if that knee that's supposed to be on the ground below where you're laying laterally on the roll can't make contact with the floor, no matter where you are, then you need to address something that's going to affect the position of the knee.
Yes. Which would be a skeletal shape change.
Right. So let's say we got both of those. This person, we try to put them on a foam roller to affect the IR shape changing adaptability of the pelvis by doing a step over drill, which would be like a good catch-all sort of foam rolling activity to do for someone trying to open up mobility movement at the hips. They can't do that as a starting point. And we have a sharpness and a focal sort of sharp feeling on the side of the hip, and we have a knee that can't rest on the ground in the starting position. What do we need to do? What are a couple things that we can do to try to get us to that starting point for the hip mobility?
So most likely, because you can't make the knee contact, the shape of the femur is an exaggerated representation of the normal representation. So a normal femur turns away from midline into external rotation and then distally turns towards IR.
Which would look like somebody that rides a lot of horses or motorcycles.
No.
Not too far.
Yeah. Not quite the full cowboy, if you will.
I'm trying to give a better, what does this person look like when they move around?
They might have a knee that always looks a little twisted.
So their kneecaps are usually pointed.
The kneecaps will point away from midline.
Okay.
Yeah. They're getting pulled away from midline in that case. They're not facing that way. They're actually getting pulled away from with some of the musculature, right? But essentially what you would do in that circumstance, you're going to roll up the inside of the thigh from knee towards the hip. That would reduce the tension that's going from hip to knee, which would limit your ability to move the knee away from midline. And so now we can go back to our sideline exercise that we started with and actually use that to sort of guide the process as to whether we reacquired the sort of longer representation of the femur that allows us to do the exercise effectively.
Right. So that the traditional approach of, well, you have tight adductors, it's more about what shape is a tight, which part of the adductor is tight, because you have all of these different muscles attaching to the bones from different angles and on different axes. So we're talking about the moving, you said proximal to, or you said distal to proximal. From knee to hip. Yeah. So from knee to hip first, because what we're talking about is the femur and the knee being bent and moved towards midline so that it can't move and touch the ground in that starting position that we wanted for the foam rolling drill that we're talking about.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do is we think about like, what is the most impactful element? And that would be the ability to move the thigh away from midline.
Yeah.
First. Yeah. Okay. So that's why we would choose that first. We could still have an effect that is more oriented closer to the hip. That can affect the knee position. But again, if we had to make a choice, like a best guess, it would be go from the knee to the hip on the inside of the thigh first.
Okay. And then let's say I do that. I go from the knee towards the hip, rolling the adductor on the inside, the groin muscles on the inside of the leg. I try to get them back in this side lying position on a roller. But it's still to them just feels sharp at the level of their like pelvis. Is that where I would want to do a more proximal femur thing first, potentially?
Well, if it's above the hip, So it's above the, if it's above the hip, then you're going to have muscle activity that's going from the side of the hip up to the crest of the pelvis, to the top of the pelvis.
Yes.
So in that circumstance, then we're going to use a foam roller, or because it's a smaller space, maybe something that's a little bit narrower. So instead of a 6-inch foam roller, we use like a 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And then we could roll from the side of the hip up into that crest. We reduce that muscle activity. Now we've eliminated that interference as well, which would be the limitation on changing the pelvis shape that we were trying to affect initially.
Okay. So that would be, that would basically be someone that was trying to say, someone told them that they had a tight glute medius or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're trying.
That's what they would say.
I'm trying to offer like the traditional perspective. Yeah. So if someone,
I just get a little sick to my stomach when you talk.
But if you get in that space between, so you got that knobby part of the femur of your of your thigh bone, and then you got the pointy part of the top of your pelvis. You're moving between that space nice and slow to allow that shape change to happen with that top of the pelvis, that wing looking bone, to be able to come back in, that ilium and the whole shape to be able to come back.
That's correct, sir.
So we limit that. So we've done, we've rolled the inside of the leg from knee towards hip in order to try to let the knee come to the ground. We've rolled the outside of the hip through that like lateral glute area of the pelvis to try to relax those muscles to allow the just you to rest your pelvis on the roller without any sort of focal tension.
Correct.
And then from there, we're going to do the activity, which I'm going to have to show a video of, otherwise people.
That's okay. It'll be good.
I'll just superimpose it on the video. So if you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, go check the YouTube. But yeah, so I'm gonna proceed to do the stepping over activity, where it's almost like I'm just walking while keeping my knee on the ground and the roller on the side of my pelvis.
Yes.
Roller's not moving. I'm moving. I'm going forward, and then I'm coming back. So I'm taking this sort of like ER to IR excursion of walking, of stepping, and I'm trying to create this sort of adaptable
pelvis
activity behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by doing that, if I accomplish what I'm trying to do, after I do that, any type of dynamic movement that I've checked or tested or feeling of stiffness through the hips should be able to kind of subside or go away.
Yes.
If I've been successful. That'll
be the goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead. You were about to say something.
Don't remember what I was going to say. I was enamored with your description.
We fixed everybody's hip mobility.
Well, the idea is to, since it is a reconsider podcast, reconsider the method that you're using and then be better at the tool. Again, the foam roller is totally underappreciated because it's just been used ineffectively. And the perspective of what it actually does is skewed.
Sure.
Right? Because people have this, I honestly don't know why they don't appreciate the shape change capabilities that are necessary to be able to move through space. Everybody's looking for a muscle solution versus representing the, like literally the total shape change in the skeleton, in the muscle position. And that's what restores it. Like yanking and pulling and stuff, it actually does have a place. It's just a very small place. And it's been overused because, again, not understanding what's actually happening in certain circumstances. The foam roller is incredibly useful.
Yeah. And it's, you know, typical.
Especially
approach.
For big, strong guys, big, typical. Strong guys. Big strong guys need more foam roller than they need any kind of yanking and pulling on stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the yanking and the pulling has already changed the length of their bones, basically.
Yes, yes.
So they need this sort of deep affecting muscle tension to allow, because if I squeeze harder by either contracting the muscles or by stretching the muscles, I'm going to get the same sort of shortening effect, correct?
Yes. People don't appreciate the fact that when you yank and pull on a muscle, it is concentrically orienting against the tension, right?
Yeah, so
that's why you feel tension.
Gymnasts have short bones, not long muscles, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, that's an entire episode.
That's another podcast.
We're not going to get into that. But yeah, I mean, just reconsider all of the, so thinking back to when I used to just do 45 minutes of foam rolling and every possible hip stretch from all angles that I could. There were certainly things in there that were helping.
Sure.
It's just a matter of like, can we get it down to a couple things and try to make the effect? And that's sort of what we're offering in terms of hip mobility. If you can get someone to do a really solid step over on a roller, and you know what you need to do in order to get them in that starting position for that activity, you might mm-hmm. open up every possible range of hip motion that you were looking for. Okay.
I got to bust him in.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to ask a question.
We need something. Man, dang. This is a toughie.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder every
week. It is getting
harder. What are we going to do when we're on like episode 400?
Well, just have to repeat. Like, we'll get all those new people.
Dang.
Let's see.
Okay, what was your after school snack when you were in like fifth grade? Like,
I could tell you what I had for lunch. I could tell you what I had for lunch every day of elementary school.
Yeah, go ahead. What was your?
It's because the same thing. It's the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Okay. Back in the olden days, before you were born, we used to have to like cook things, right? We didn't have the microwave. There was a plastic bag and it had three slices of turkey in it and gravy. And my mom would make me like a turkey Manhattan for lunch every day. Every day. Because I lived right behind the elementary school, so I could just go home for lunch. Yes. Same thing. Two pieces of bread, three slices of this processed turkey with gravy every day, glass of milk, I would sit halfway between the dining room and the living room, because I couldn't eat in the living room. Right? I could sit there and I could see the TV. I would sit there. I would eat my lunch and I would just run back to recess. So I had the same thing every day. So I didn't really have an after school snack, but I definitely had a lunch. But after school snack, I wouldn't even think of what it would be because I didn't go home. I would just go to a friend's house or something.
Yeah. I mean, I can still smell the cafeteria food. It's like ingrained in my I don't even know. Were those called Ingrams? What are those things in your
Ingrams?
System? Yeah, they just Ingram? Never go away. I can smell the really crappy pizza, the cardboard pizza.
Yes.
Yeah.
The rectangle?
The rectangle pizza? The yellow, like, thick nacho cheese that they would put on stuff that would, like, congeal and have, like, a skin to it. You remember Absolutely. That?
Of course. It's good for you.
All right. I want to know, like, internationally, what people that grew up in Spain or Germany, like, what school lunches were like for them. I'm sure it was a lot.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Leave a message for that. Okay. See you later.